AdYak.
You're listening to AdYak. AdYak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Our mission is to inspire creativity and enhance the professional development of the advertising and marketing communities where we live and work. I'm your host, Bill Childs, and I'll talk with artists, designers, writers, directors, photographers, along with those who work in a creative capacity. Our aim here is to serve as a creative resource to help you stay informed, entertained, and above all, inspired. But first, I want to thank ASR Media. We appreciate your support and collaboration. Welcome to Season 6 of AdYak. If you're here, maybe you made it through a few of your own battles. Maybe you're carrying big questions about your work, your worth, and what it all really adds up to. That's exactly why I wanted to start this season with a conversation that doesn't pretend to have all the answers, but does ask all the right questions. Today, I'm joined by Melissa Smith of Pack Oil Company. Melissa is an account executive who works across the pharmaceutical and OEM markets with a focus on medical devices, fire and safety, first responders, the military, and industrial OEM sectors. Prior to that, she worked for Adams Outdoor Advertising and the Morning Call Media Group. But that's just the resume. What we really talked about was what it means to stay human in the middle of all that. We talked about staying alert in a world that seeks to distract us, about presence, when life pulls you in 10 different directions, and how sometimes the bravest thing you can do is just slow down and recharge. This episode is a reminder. You're not alone. Your work, your art, your creativity, your heart, it matters. This season, I want to go deeper. I'll be talking to people who've built things, broken things, and then got honest about what it all really meant. Melissa lives her life with intention. She chooses to see the world through the lens of positivity. And when it comes to work-life balance, it's not a myth. It's a fight worth showing up for. And Melissa shares how she does it. Melissa is sharp, generous, and grounded. And she knows that success without mindfulness is just noise. So here is my AdYak with Melissa Smith. So I was trying to think, when was the first time we met? Was that, I know it was at the Morning Call. Would that have been in 2007? That's when I went back.
Oh, it is? Okay. I started there in 05, and I think I went up to the advertising department. Yeah, about 07. That was
okay.
That
I was in marketing. You were hired initially for circulation, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what year?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about that. What made you kind of like end up at the Morning Call? How did that all happen?
So I was a server at Red Lobster.
Okay.
Because I had graduated from college, moved out to Montana for like a year, came back. And when I was in college, I was a server at Red Lobster. And So when I came back home, I was like, oh, well, I've done that before. So I applied. And, you know, I started thinking after a year of doing them, like, I need to get myself, you know, a real job, quote unquote, because I had graduated college. And I'm like, okay, I can't do this forever. And my dad found it for me. He was an avid Morning Call reader. And that was, you know, they posted all the jobs in there, and he saw it, and he said, the Morning Call, that's going to be a job you're going to have for the rest of your life. The newspaper is going to be here forever.
You're talking to somebody who thought the same thing when I started there. Yeah. I was like, this is my place. I'm going the whole way.
Exactly.
I made it 17 years, but you know,
that's two times. Long. I mean, I was there for 10, so I, you know, now that's a really long time nowadays. Mm-hmm. So I started off and as a circulation coordinator. It was like a brand new job, so I got to kind of go in and do what I wanted with the job, which was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then within 2 years, I worked my way up to advertising, which was a lot of fun, and that's where we met.
That's right. No, I actually met you when you were in circulation.
Oh, you did? Okay. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Linda brought you over. I think you were hired at the same time, if I'm not mistaken, with Nicole.
Yes. Dada?
Yeah.
Yes.
You and Nicole. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then you move up to advertising, right? Mm-hmm. Were you an account executive?
Yes.
Okay.
So in the automotive, which was
Okay.
kind of cool because my dad, again, big influencer in my life, he always worked on cars. You know, he was a mechanic since he was like 13 years old and kind of worked his way up, and he was an automotive auto body mechanic and manager for a really long time. So I've just always really been interested in cars and around cars, so it kind of fit.
That's interesting because he just retired from LCTI, which is where I teach. So kind of small world, right? Okay, so you get up there, you're doing the account executive, cars.com, but ultimately you ended up as the cars.com manager, right? So tell me about how
So,
that happened. How did that come about?
you know, I can't remember exactly how the chips fell, but after I want to say maybe a year and a half of selling and being an account executive, there was an opening and I applied for it. At the time, I was going for my master's degree, so that was the end goal, was to kind of work my way up into leadership positions. And applied for that job. That was a big moment in my life when I got that job. It was just really special to me, really special to Rick. We had, you know, we were just starting our family then, so it was like I still remember Melt. Remember when Melt was just being built in Taunton Valley, and when I was an account executive, we drove by there and we had these dreams. You know, you have these dreams. One day, when if this happens or that happens, we're going to do that. I remember driving by and we said, you know, if we can ever afford it to celebrate somehow, we're going to go to Melt. Have a good dinner there. And, you know, that's what we did after I got that position.
Okay, so now was that your first position in leadership, like a leadership role?
Not really. I mean, in college I was an RA, so I kind of
Okay.
worked my way up. That I always want I don't I just have this thing about working my way up. I start here and then I just want to keep on climbing the ladder. So, you know, I was on the floor as a resident in college, and then I applied for an RA position. I was an RA for a year or two, and then I was a head RA for my last year in the dorm, so I oversaw all the RAs.
Okay. All right. So, do you feel like leadership was always a part of who you were? Or that you were going to somehow, hopefully one day as you worked your way up, you would end up in a leadership role. Was that part of the plan, or was it just, talk to me about that. Like what was your feelings around leadership when you were growing up?
I do think it was a part of the plan always. Just to, I was a, actually, now that I think about it, when I go back, I was a supervisor when I was in, you know, I was 16 years old at one of my first jobs at Cinnabon in the mall. And I became a supervisor there. So I was doing the closing shifts and counting the money and, you know, closing up the store. So I think that was actually my first leadership position. But I'm the first born in my family. Are you?
To what? Oh
You
yeah.
were, yeah. So I feel like it's like part of our persona to want to be leaders and to just be up there in those types of roles.
It's funny you should mention that because you just made me think of something. I remember it didn't matter when I had my job at McDonald's when I was in high school. I got hired to work the grill, right? So to make like burgers and stuff. And I remember never being like happy with just doing the job that I was assigned to do. I always wanted to learn more. Like I remember saying, "Hey, can you teach me how to do the cashier? Like the, you know, I want to do that one day." And then they did. Employees love people that want to like learn, that don't just want to stay in the same job and do the same thing over and over. Then I learned how to do maintenance, which was like, emptying the garbage cans, filling up all the different things that needed to be filled up, by the time I left McDonald's, I had done like I had every job. And then I could then I'm like open for more hours. They can plug me in. So I'm not just seen as the grill guy or somebody working grill. I could work counter. Then after I learned the counter, then I learned the drive-through. So it was just I think that's just something inherent in, and I know it's in me, and it sounds like it's in you as well. Like where you just kind of you go into a place and you're like, okay, how can I add my value here? What more can I do? What more can I learn to become more valuable to this company that I'm working for? Fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's good advice for young people just starting out.
Yeah. And then you get into these roles, and then the more you learn, you just, as long as you're doing it from a place of for yourself. It's not like I'm going to do this and then I'm going to get a raise, because that doesn't always work like that. You want to kind of do it from a genuine place.
True.
And I think I was like that with every job. I mean, when I did my morning call paper route, same thing. I wanted to, like, if people said to me, "Hey, can you put the paper in the door?" I made sure the paper was in the door. I didn't just like throw it from my bike or a car window. That was important to them. They wanted, and I didn't want these people to have to like go outside to like get their paper. So I stuck it in the door. It just seemed like kind of the right thing to do, you know? So when you
How did, can
started.
I ask how you got that paper route? Was that something that was handed down to you, or because I know that those were coveted back in the day?
Yeah, it was exactly like that. The guy that my friend who was doing it before got busy with a job that he was doing at Egypt Star Bakery, and he said, I can't do this paper route anymore. It's killing me." And I said, "Okay." He said, "So if you want it, I'll let the district manager know. They'll come interview you, talk to you, and then you can get it." So yeah, it was like kind of like you have to be, yeah, you had to know somebody.
Right.
I loved it. I really did. I learned so much on that job. Customer service, money management, getting up on time, personal responsibility. I mean, at 15 years old, that's not bad,
Getting up at what time did you have to get up? 5 earlier than that? Yeah. That's a big deal for a 15-year-old.
There were some times where on a Sunday after I delivered, I'd go home and I'd go back to sleep, and then I'd wake up in a panic at like 9 o'clock and think, "Did I deliver today?"
Right?
But
I get
I
that.
always did. I never missed. It was just that's where I learned to, people laugh at me sometimes, especially my wife, because I can set my internal clock. Like if I know I have to get up tomorrow morning at 4:30, I just tell myself I have to get up at 4:30, and boom, I'm up at 4:25.
That's
I know it's
amazing.
weird. It's weird. I think I learned, I got that skill by doing a paper out.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. And I hated the sound of my alarm. So it was like, I'm going to wake up before that alarm gets me, because it's so annoying. It was one of those old digital ones that went like, like that. Yeah. Okay. So you're, let's go back to cars.com. So you're doing the job. You're managing a team. What are some of the challenges that you experienced with that? Did you enjoy doing the job?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I
What'd
really
you love
loved
about it?
it. I loved leading. I loved being someone that I feel like my reps look to for advice. They came to me not only for just work advice, but I'm sure you had the same thing with people because you were a manager as well. They came to you for a lot more than
Sure.
just that, and that's a good feeling. That just means that
They trust you.
they try exactly. Yeah. So I really, really liked being in that position a lot. And cars.com was new. They knew how to treat us really well. They were just a company that really treated its reps and its managers and everything with all the perks, all the fun, great sales meetings, and they were based out of Chicago. Chicago's a really fun city, so we got to travel there. So it was a really good experience.
What do you think the people on your team would say about you and your leadership style if I had them here and I said, I know you worked with Melissa. What was she like? What do you think they would say about you?
I think that they would say I was really positive. I think that they would say I was definitely trustworthy. And that I was good at acknowledging when they did well, a good cheerleader for them. And there were some hard conversations that I had to have as well, but I treated everybody with respect that was on my team.
Okay, I like that. What didn't you like about the job?
I traveled a lot. I think with that job, that again, that was when we were first starting a family. And I do remember the first night that I came home to Troy, my oldest, and it was the first day that I hadn't seen him awake. And so, I left before he got up in the morning because he was a baby. And then I came home and it was, like 10 o'clock at night and he was sleeping for the night. And I wasn't there. It was the first day and I was sad. So I would say that. But then also there were times, especially as I got into the routine, I did like traveling. There were some times, that I'd be like, see you later. I'll be back in a few days, especially after we had the third one, and they were all 2 years apart, so you have a 1, 3, and a 5-year-old, and then you're like, I'm out of here.
Chicago too is was with most of the trips in Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah, great town.
Yes.
Love
Lot of fun.
Chicago.
Lot
I
of
used
fun.
to do a lot of shoots there. We had a couple clients at the one agency that I worked at, and we would always be flying in and out of Chicago to do commercials and video work for a couple of companies up there, and I loved it. So, yeah.
Did
So
you have just one spot that you would go to do these, or did you kind of go bop around the city and have different
well, we went around
locations?
the city after we were done with the shooting, mostly. So we kind of did that, but mostly it was like at two locations. There were these technical colleges, technical schools that we
Okay.
would go do a lot of video work, a lot of interviews of students, administrators, shoot a B-roll day, stuff like that. But it was fun.
That's
So,
neat.
but now you're working at a company called Pack Oil. Okay. Tell me about Pack Oil. What do they do? And what is your job there?
So Pack Oil Company was started in, I think it was 1953. So it's been around for a long time, but it started just as somebody selling oil barrels, which is where the oil comes from. And the first owner that started the company, so while he was delivering these oil barrels, another person came and said, "Hey, if you're delivering these oil barrels, do you think that you might be able to get me, whatever XYZ product along with oil?" So he checked around. Oh yeah, I can do that too. And so then it just grew and grew and grew into now I'm delivering you 5 different products. And that's what a manufacturer's rep is. That is what I do now. I sell for different manufacturers, different kinds of packaging products. So everything from pallets to like hardware. I can source hardware for things, materials, and then anything like dunnage or packaging that you might get for like cold chain medicines and things like that.
So what did what's your primary role then there now?
So I'm an account executive. I'm no longer in a leadership position, but I'm really proud of the fact that I am the first and only woman that's ever been an account executive at Pack Oil Company, which is a little bit hard to believe. But
Okay, breaking ground. That's you. That fits your brand.
I love that. And it's really, number one, I manifested this job. I would have never pulled it out of a lineup of a job that I would say, yes, this is me. This is what I want to do. However, when I was manifesting my perfect job, this is it. It's
Like
challenging
that.
in the fact that I knew nothing about manufacturing 7 years ago when I started in this role. Nothing. It wasn't even at the top of my list to learn about any of that. Engineering, manufacturing, plants, the way that kind of stuff works. But it really grew me into the person that I am now, and I was educated and challenged in ways that I, didn't even fathom. But looking back now, it was all part of the plan.
They talk a lot. I talk a lot about on this podcast sometimes with people who, how the dots connect sometimes, a lot of times for us, but you can't connect them. You can't do the connecting. The dots have to connect as you look back
So
and be like,
true.
oh, that dot led to that dot, led to that dot. They all kind of connect. I think for me, like even washing dishes, which was my first job at Dempsey's restaurant on 23rd and Hamilton, that was my very first job. There's things in there that lessons that I learned that I still carry with me, even with the paper route, you know, just treating people fairly, you know, listening to what they say. Like, so where, how do you see your dots if you look back now, and how they connect? Do you see how they all connect, or are you still kind
Oh
of in the
yeah.
process of connecting them all?
Well, I'm still in the process, but I if you would say to me, what's one thing that you would change in your past 46 years, I would say nothing. And that doesn't mean that I didn't have any struggles and any really bad low times. It just means that when I look back and connect those dots, as you're saying, they were all meant to be there for some type of reason or another. And it's all, well, it's there for life lessons and learning.
Sure. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Pull on that thread a little bit. What do you, how do you roll today? Like, what is your mindset? What, how do you get up every day to go do that job and kind of figure out how you're going to help somebody? Like, how do you stay inspired, I guess is the question.
So there's so many things I'm thinking right now.
Take your time.
There's a lot of ways I stay inspired, but I think just having healthy habits and a good lifestyle, a lifestyle that is all about well-being is how I stay inspired, how I do well at my job, how I am a mom and a good wife, and how I just am as a whole person. That's all of that takes place. That's how I get up in the morning. I think it's boring kind of the way that I do things. I'm a very routine person. I get up at 4:30 every morning. And I go downstairs, make myself a cup of tea, and I read and I journal and I meditate. By 5:30, I'm at the gym. I'm there for 45 minutes. I come home and, I'm either getting the kids off to school or getting ready for my work day here in the summer. I eat the same thing for breakfast. I eat a little different for lunch and dinner, but and then throughout the day, I sprinkle in walks and, just different things like that. But for the most part, every single part of my day is structured like that because it leaves room for creativity and for additional thoughts that I don't have to think about. I don't have to think about what I'm going to eat for breakfast. I don't even think anymore about going to the gym. I don't even think about that. I just know at night I set out my clothes for the gym the next day. It's just a part of who I am now. And when you do that for yourself, it may sound boring to some people because it's like you do the same thing every day, you eat the same thing, but no, that I'm doing that for myself, for my mental wellness and for to bring in more creativity, and because it's calming and it's peaceful to lead a life where you're just doing the same things every day and in a nice routine.
Yeah, I structure. I mean, that's, I think so many of us crave it, but we don't really know how to get it, you know,
Right.
because you do have to make it is, you have to make an effort, you know, like to put those clothes out, you know, while you're still in the middle of cleaning up dinner or making whatever, you know what I mean? You're doing, you know, it's, you have to remember that. I do a little bit of that, maybe not to your extent, but there's things that I do to get ready when I'm back at school that when I come down in the morning, the coffee cup's already on the Keurig, the pod's already in the pod, you know, the water level is there. I made sure the night before. You know what I mean? So like things like that.
Sure.
Make I make my bed every day because I feel
Yes.
like that's an important step. I'm up at 5 when I'm at school, when I go to school, and then I leave it at 6 so I can come down. I kind of ease into my day. I pack my lunch, and then yeah, it's a routine. I, there's nothing wrong with change, but I do like the fact how you said like it leaves room for creativity to come in, which I do think that that's a byproduct of doing that.
Absolutely. If your head is clouded with a million things that decisions that you have to make, then you don't have any room for anything else. And that's also where mindfulness plays a part. I'm a big, big, big proponent of mindfulness. And that mindfulness, I always, when I first sit down and practice my mindfulness, I picture a little custodian and I picture my brain and I picture him like moving a little broom across my brain and sweeping away all the stuff that I don't need to think about. Sweeping away all these problems so that my brain is nice and clean, squeaky clean, all set to take in the good.
I love that. That's very, so very intentional, what you're doing
Yes.
there. And you have a visual now tied to it. That's kind of cool. I like that.
Thanks.
One of the things that you started doing recently, or maybe you've been doing it for a while, and I just noticed that I really liked, is this LinkedIn, the LinkedIn stuff that you've been doing, where you've been tying packaging to people and fashion and what we wear and how we, can you talk about like how did you think of that? I think it's brilliant, by the way.
Thank you.
And it really makes what you do relatable, even if I don't understand like all the ins and outs of everything that you do. I understand how people look and how they want to look and how they dress. So talk to me about how you came up with that, and you know, just yeah, just let me know.
So I am very lucky to have a husband who's a photographer, and so he does, branding for people and companies. And so I asked him one day if he could take some photos of me. I think one of the very first photos that he took was me with my poodles. And it was like winter and I had these big earmuffs on and I had my two poodles and I was in black and white and they're black and tan. So it was a neat shot. And I thought, okay, how can I tie this to packaging? And I wanted to come up with one type of series that I could do to make things a little bit easier. Because I kept on reading, okay, if you're on LinkedIn, you have to post every day. And I thought, how am I supposed to come up with content for every day? Well, let me just start with one day. And so that one day was Friday. I figure Fridays are the days a lot of people are on LinkedIn. They're just waiting for the weekend to come, so they're scrolling. And I can't take credit for the name. It's somebody I used to work with, Sean. We were kind of just like talking the one day. He's in sales, I'm in sales, and salespeople like to, talk about challenges and stuff with each other. And so I was saying to him, hey, I want to do some type of thing on LinkedIn where I talk about fashion because I really like dressing up. And he came up with it. So I ended up calling it Industry Chic Fashion Friday.
Okay, like
And
that.
I just have a different outfit or I'm in a different place and I refer to whatever I'm wearing as my packaging and then relate it to some type of either challenge in packaging or something that I'm selling or talk about one of the manufacturers in packaging that I represent so I can kind of bring it all home because packaging isn't always the most glamorous career. And a lot of people don't know about it. So they don't understand it. And I'm hoping that by these posts that I can help them to understand it and also bring forward those people that are in packaging so that, I talk about myself being a packaging expert. And it is working because I'm getting messages on LinkedIn from people that are seeing these posts. And when they need some type of packaging product, they're messaging me. So I'm starting to see that it's working.
Well, it's memorable, and it's you know, you're putting two things together. Yes, they go together, but they really kind of don't. Do you know what I mean? Which is what I
Sure.
think makes it work and memorable. Okay, all right. Well, then to that question or to that point, what is a misconception that people have about packaging, in your opinion?
I think that people think that packaging is fluff. And it's not a necessity. But packaging is an experience because when packaging is done right, you don't really think about it, right? You just, let's say that you have a medicine that needs to be kept at a certain temperature and you get it, and every time that you get it, it's at the perfect temperature. You put it right into your refrigerator, you're good to go. One day, it's in different packaging. And when you open that packaging up, your medicine is hot because it's a summer day.
Oh.
And now it's trash. You can't use it because it has to stay at refrigerated temperature. Now you're mad. Now you could end up getting sick or worse. So packaging, when it's done right, it's not even, you don't even think about it, but when it's done wrong, it's a major, major problem. So it's important. And it also it has let an emotional feel towards it. So, if I'm opening up a Christmas present for my husband, and it's a little box, and I unwrap it, and it's this beautiful velvet black box, and I know there's a ring inside, I'm really happy, right? So for Christmas, my husband, he's wrapped up a box for me, and I unwrap it. And this time when I unwrap it, it's a little blue, teal blue box that says Tiffany and Company on it. Okay. Do you see that? Do you feel that difference? It's all about the packaging. It can be the same ring. It won't be the exact, but it could look the same. But because it's in different packaging, and that packaging is a feeling, and it's a brand, and it's a persona, you feel differently about getting a ring in a Tiffany and Company box than you do in a just a plain black velvet box.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a on the consumer side, for me, I mean, Apple, the packaging that Apple does is just,
Yes.
it's, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's over the top. It's just so well thought out, and it's almost like, I get it, because that's what their brand is. Why are they gonna, like, just throw their computers in boxes and just, it doesn't make sense. I mean, the stuff that their packaging is unbelievable. I mean, they're my favorite in terms of, like, what they do and how they package everything, whether it be earbuds or an iPhone or a mouse. I mean, the packaging, you could tell they don't skimp on it. And it means, and it matters. It really
It
does. It's
does.
part of the experience. You're opening up that computer for the first time. It's like, woof, it's like a religious experience,
Yes.
right?
And the other thing you always talk about Apple doing well is that they don't show that they used to not show their products, right? Wasn't it the first Apple commercial that came out and they didn't even show a
Yeah,
computer?
their two biggest compute Think Different, and then the one, oh my God, it's escaping me now, with the 1984. Neither one showed the computer. Neither commercial showed the computer, and they're considered, those two commercials are considered to be two of the best ad TV advertisements that were ever created. Apple has two of them.
Sure, I agree.
Think Different and 1984. One was on the third quarter in the Super Bowl, and then Think Different was when Jobs was hired back in the company, and he worked with Lee Clow and Chiat Day, and then reimaged Apple and put all the people who kind of met the ethos of the brand, not necessarily computer users, and just pulled them all into a commercial. So Muhammad Ali, Jim Henson, Frank Lloyd Wright, Picasso, Dylan, Martin Luther King, none of those
Amazing
people worked
people.
on computers, but Apple said, that's what we're going for. That's what we're about. So, okay. So I'm interested to know, how do you do packaging where there's a temperature control? How does that work?
There are certain boxes that are they're very light. They're made of EPS. And it's kind of like, if you the old Dunkin' Donuts coffee cups, where they were kind of like that spongy material. You could see all the little tiny circles that were melted together. So EPS is like that. So it's very efficient to ship because it's lightweight. But it also, when you have, so it's called the R value. It's how much heat and different temperatures can stay inside the box. So there's a lot of engineers that work on these boxes where they can say, okay, if you have this many ice packs in here for this many days, the product inside this box is going to stay between this and this temperature.
Oh,
It's
wow.
amazing. It's these and but these are the people that are saving lives. These are the people that are making sure that your medicines are delivered, on time at the right temperature so that all you have to do is take it out of the box and put it right in the refrigerator.
Wow. That's
The
nuts.
COVID vaccine was sent like that. You remember it was It was one of those things where it was like everything, it had to be kept ultra cold. And that was those were engineers behind that were saying, okay, we need to try and figure out how to keep those at temperature so that those can be delivered to the places where they're administering the COVID-19 shot.
Wow. So how do you then, how, what's what then, what then is your role in all that? Your role is kind of like the sales aspect of that. You're working with a manufacturer. They need to kind of ship something. You work with the engineers at Pack Oil, and then kind of a solution is kind of like put together. And then you go back and
That's
describe,
right.
whatever that's going to cost. And, do you guys build prototypes or, so
Yeah.
that they could, the manufacturer or whoever is shipping, could see what it would look like?
They can, so we have engineers at each one of the manufacturers I represent. So if we're talking about a one of the manufacturers I represent, they make the defibrillator vest that people wear when they're, when their heart stops.
Sure.
So they would help with the design, they can help with the sewing of the actual vest. And it's pretty cool because that facility, they know that they're changing lives there. So in the part of the manufacturing plant where they're actually sewing these vests together, they have a little clock, like a deli counter where it shows you like what number is up. They have a number on there, and it's number of times that the vest went off and saved somebody's life. And it is so it makes it that much more impactful when you go in there and the people are working and you see them actually, hand stitching some of these things or just they see the impact that they're having on people's lives by making these vests. So it's seeing those parts of it makes it more to me, a personal part of the selling. Yes, I'm, a salesperson, I'm selling packaging, but when it's really important packaging like that, you see that you're making a difference.
Life or death, really.
Yes.
Yeah. So another place that we intersected for a short amount of time was at Adams Outdoor, right? I always talk fondly about outdoor from just a pure messaging standpoint, and I still love it. I still love, there's nothing better than a great billboard design, right? Do you find yourself driving around kind of like looking at billboard designs, kind of
Always.
like,
I always do. I'll say that billboard has too many words. Nobody's gonna see that phone number. No Starburst. That's your thing. No Starburst. Less is
Starburst don't sell
more.
more. They just
Yep.
look like they do, but they don't.
Take away all of that and just leave that one word or that one photo or yes, I'm constantly critiquing billboards.
I think it's never going to stop. I just, I designed them for 2 years straight, and people would always think like, didn't you get bored? Because you're looking at two sizes. You're looking at, and this is before digital. So, you're looking at a 14 by 48 or a 12 by 25, and that was it. Those were the two sizes. But, it was such a fun job. I mean, I left the morning call to go to Adams Outdoor the first time when I was hired as an art director. One of the artists, two artists, we were both art directors. But the one cool thing that the general manager at the time, John Hayes, had done, which I still to this day can't believe he did it. He put the power of the final say of the designs in the artist's hands. So
Amazing.
if you were working there at the time, you had to get the approval from myself or the other designer, Bill Hickey. And if you came in with some Avrepanikin crazy billboard, like we didn't like let that power go to our heads, but we were going to say like, Melissa, like, well, no, we can't, we're sorry, we'll redesign it for you, we'll show what we could do, but this isn't going up. And even if you went down there and said, John, this is crazy, this is a $45,000 sale, I've been working these guys for months, nope, the product meant too much on the road because the name Adams was underneath it. It's almost like Adams was like endorsing whatever they put up, they're endorsing. That's how John Hayes saw it, right? So he was like, we're not gonna, our name is on that. So it better be something good. And I was surprised that he held true to that. He really did. He never, we didn't turn a lot down, but there were some where we just were like, no, this is a mitigated disaster, and there's no concept here. It's just, I didn't have the term adver panicking at the time, but that's what it is. It was adver panicking. So, but I just love a good billboard design.
How did that responsibility that he put on you and that management style help the way you thought about the work that you were doing?
Well, we knew we had a standard to meet, and he put forth like kind of like this little manifesto where he just, if you could imagine the word creativity and it sitting on a pedestal, because he reorged everything about the company around creativity and design. So he said, we are no longer selling signs on the side of the road. Get that out of your head. We're not doing, this exit, food, gas, lodging. Like it's those times are done. These are going to be well thought out campaigns. You'll work with the design team that we had at the time that I was a part of, or if you go to an agency. And what he did was he instituted the weekly creative session, which meant all the reps had to be in the room on a Tuesday morning from 9:30 to 10:30, maybe to 11, for a creative session. It was mandatory. You could not skip out on it. So he really pumped creativity, as a concept, and said, we're going this way. And he just stuck to his guns. It was incredible to watch. I was coming out of the morning call as someone who was used to just designing, newspaper ads. This was a whole other world. You want to talk about learning a new world? It was like, okay, hotshot. Now you got to come up with like three words or less to define a company, do it graphically, and make it be compelling. I mean, I was a little, I'm not gonna lie, I was intimidated. I came home my first day after I went to Adams, and I said, I can't do this job. I can't do this job. There were reps in the room that were coming up with headlines just like off the top of their head because they were so conditioned. I didn't have that conditioning yet. It'd be like somebody trying to run a marathon and you haven't even run a 5K. You're gonna be in a world of hurt, right? And I just got spooked and I thought, I can't do this. I need text. I need copy. I need, I'm a print designer. Like I can simplify. But I don't know if I'm gonna. And I worked with this guy, Bill Hickey. He was great, wonderful, wonderful designer. And he mentored me and he schooled me. And he said, you'll get there. You'll get there. Don't worry. Like, don't put so much pressure on. And I leaned on him. If there were times where like a board came up and I was like, you know what? I'm kind of okay. But Bill, what do you think? And he'd be like, nope. So it's kind of like I learned from him. I learned a lot. I really did. Once I started to kind of get my sea legs and started to kind of like, oh, I can do this. I can really, yeah. And then I was doing, I had so much fun. Oh my God, so much fun at that job. And we were doing the best work. We were laughing all the time. We had great camaraderie. It affected the people that came into the company because they had to join that kind of mentality that we were putting forth. It wouldn't have worked if it was just, I'm just here to sell billboards and I don't care what they look like. Nope. You're not. So to me, Melissa, that gave me a peek behind the curtain into the promised land, because I always thought to myself, why does work always have to be so like drudgery? Why can't we be laughing and having fun and doing great work and making money? You can. You can. You just have to have a leader that's confident enough to say, we're going there. And then not get spooked when the first job comes in that is gonna like, offset the balance sheet if we say no, or is gonna upset an agency. He stuck to his guns and it worked. And
He took a risk and it paid off for sure.
we did raise revenue 2 years that I was there. And then I left there to go to an agency, an ad agency, and I begrudgingly left Adams because I was having so much fun. But the opportunity to go into an agency that was just starting and help see if I could help it, get out of the dining room, if you will, that it was
Right.
RM Squared was the agency. It was just too much of an opportunity to walk away from. Everybody thought I was nuts. Everybody.
And you took all that knowledge, though, and brought it there. And
Yes.
so you were kind of,
Yes.
creating that ripple effect of, hey, here's what works, and I've seen it work, and all of this can happen, and we can still make money and have a good time.
Yeah.
And now, and bringing it over there.
That actually makes the work better, actually. It really does. Like if everybody can kind of check their ego at the door, realize who we're working for, don't let like ego get in the way of anybody like saying like, any kind of critique or anything like that. If you all can get in alignment, there's nothing that can stop you. Like you can do anything. Like
That's
you
true.
can really do anything. And truth be told, I took that mentality that and leadership style that I learned from John Hayes and plugged it right into the advertising department when I was the creative director there and working with the designers and the writers and the photographers. It's a very simple thing. It's just the upside down pyramid. John Hayes believed that leadership is servanthood. So if you're the leader, you're at the bottom of that pyramid supporting everyone else. Most leadership styles that you see are the pyramid with the leader at the top and everyone else underneath supporting that leader at the top. I've
I
worked for some of
love
those
that
leaders.
visual. Yes, that is
It's so
so
simple,
good.
right? It's leadership
Yes.
is servanthood. That's it. And that's what I did at the morning call. And it worked. It worked. It builds trust. The work gets better. It took a couple of designers a little while to get used to me critiquing their work because they weren't used to having someone critique their stuff. But I did it with respect and in a way that they got better. And then there were a couple of them that were like, I didn't like how like I used to have to show you my work, but now that like you've been doing it for a while, you've made me better. And I was like, love it. That's awesome. Love to hear that. So that's how you do it.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I wanted to go back again a little bit to this work-life balance because it's a hot topic. Everybody talks about it. I think a lot of people struggle with it. But I really like some of this stuff you were talking about. This guy clearing your mind, with the broom, clearing it out, keep it, because there's so much stuff that could come in to derail. Do you ever have days? And what do you do when you have a day where you do get derailed, where that little guy can't sweep enough fast enough to keep your mind clean for you enough for you? What do you do when that happens?
I am very gentle with myself. I think a lot of people do the opposite, where if they feel like they've screwed up with something in life, or they're just not getting it, or I set out this goal and I just can't achieve it, I'm such an idiot, that type of negative
Negative
self-talk.
self-talk.
I've never had that. I'm very lucky. And I think it's because my parents never showed that. And maybe if they did have that, they kept it internal, but they never did. And I feel like you really mirror, the way that your parents raise you and what they say to themselves. So I've never had that. And so I, on my bad days, I say to myself, okay, you're going to do the best that you can today. And that means if you have to go and take an extra walk this afternoon so that you can get out of your environment and clear your head, then you're going to do that. And if you need to go to bed tonight at 8 o'clock because you just don't want this, you want this day to end, you want to start fresh tomorrow, then you're going to go to bed at 8 o'clock. I try to eat healthy on those days. I know there's other people that, feel like they need fried food and, lots of chocolate and donuts, and I definitely eat chocolate, but I know how I perform the best, how my mind stays clear the best, and it's by just allowing myself to relax. Like on those days, I don't do a really good job with going to the gym. Like I go to the gym, but I don't push myself and I don't yell at myself for not pushing hard. I might even go down in weights when I'm lifting weights, or I don't do as many reps and I just say to myself, hey, it's good that you're here. Or I don't even go to the gym because some days, you just don't even want to deal with people. So I'm like, on those days, I just go out and I take a walk by myself. And so it's good on those bad days to allow yourself grace.
Yes.
You a lot of people allow other people grace, their friends and their family, but they don't allow themselves grace. And that's a really important part of being good to yourself and overall well-being.
I love that. I had a mentor that said to me, listen, you can have bad days. What you can't do is not say, not admit to it. You got to admit to it. You got to tell me, like, if you're not feeling it, like, I need to know that. And he
Yes.
said, I said, okay, well, what's going to happen then? He's like, well, then we're going to go fishing or something. We're going to do something else because to sit there and try to like beat yourself up doesn't work.
No.
Just get away and go do something else. But another thing that he said that I thought was pretty cool, he said, just don't leave the playing field. Stay on the field. You know what I mean? You don't have to like just stay on the field as much as you can. Don't grab your ball and run home. You know,
Right.
just stay on the field. It usually does work its way out, you know.
Sure.
I've done a lot of work with this because I was for a lot of years, I was a pretty, I don't know, I think I would say I was a pretty angry guy. I viewed the world as kind of like not even like the glass is half empty. I viewed it like that glass is about to fall on the ground and shards are going to go everywhere and I'm going to cut my feet. So I had to really kind of like turn that mindset around. And it happened. It started to happen, you know, when I went through a bunch of challenging things, a layoff, a divorce. It was almost like what you're doing isn't working. So you better find another way. And the only other way was like, well, let's do the positive thing now. Let's see how that goes for a while. Gratitude,
Yes.
huge. You know, if you, I feel like if you can stay in touch with your gratitude, just being grateful for the life that you have. Yeah, you can pull out of it because it starts with that. I believe it starts with gratitude.
It totally does. You can have the worst day in the world, and you can pull one thing out of that day that you can think of that made you maybe not happy, but smile, or one thing that wasn't that bad.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then too, it doesn't help to be an overthinker because, you know, as an overthinker, I don't know where you land on that scale, but you know, funny, I attribute my overthinking to Adams. I don't know if that's because I feel like at Adams, we were always like, not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. Keep going, keep going, keep going. So I never learned how to turn my brain off. So it did help me with coming up with concepts. Because it was always like, how do we take it from good to great? It's good, but let's make it great. Well, you got to think more. You have to like sit with it more. You have to like marinate with it more. You know, but I've totally changed my mindset on that. I don't have a negative mindset anymore. I can't afford it really. It's and it doesn't serve
No.
me.
It doesn't serve anybody,
No.
to have that negative mindset. It actually, there have been a ton of studies on the power of positivity, and I've heard other people say, that it's being fake or false being positive all the time, but it actually does affect your sleep. When you ha are more positive,
Sure.
you have a better restful sleep, you have less anxiety, you have less depression, and somehow that energy, because everybody has energy, you cannot deny that there is not energy. That energy, when it's programmed more towards the positive, is going to bring you more positive. So it absolutely would benefit everybody to think more positively. And I have two books here that are important to me. One is the Child's Play, but you had talked to me, you said about overthinking. I always plug this book because it honestly did change me. Don't believe everything you think by Joseph Wen. I've read it twice and I refer back to it every day. Every day I just kind of go like this and I say, okay, what page is being brought to my attention today? Because
Who's the
it
author of that one? Who's the author?
Joseph Wen.
Okay. Let me see the spelling. Can you hold it up? Nope, higher. There you go. Okay, got it. All right. Just in case people wanted to like look into that book.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of those books that when you're done reading it, it's like I really learn not to overthink things because you can't change what you can't change. And what I always think is, is the world is always changing. So if one day I'm having a bad day, I'm not going to have that day over and over and over. It's going to change tomorrow. But so if you're having a good day, that's going to change. If you're having a bad day, that's going to change. Things are always changing. So don't get stuck on one thing that's just rolling around in your head over and again. You're not able to invite creativity in. You're not able to invite problem solving in. When you're just constantly ruminating about something in your brain, that's when you can't bring other good things in.
I agree. Yeah. Actually, even with worry, the things I worry about, 98% of them don't happen. The things that I worry about or obsess about, or I think, the 90, but like for some reason, we don't go back and check that and go, oh, that thing I worried, yeah, it didn't happen, huh? Like, and really, all you should really be doing is worrying about the things that do happen. Deal with those, right? Instead of like all this, we're all works in progress. I wanted to ask you, what's your experience or your relationship with kind of like doom scrolling? How do you limit your social media? Because that, to me, that's where a lot of this stuff stems from, is people just looking at everybody's highlight reels and just seeing all the great things and the vacations and everything that you don't have. And that's tough, and especially tough for the kids that I teach at LCTI, and for adults as well.
Sure. It's all about not comparing. I am genuinely happy for the people that I see that are on vacation and enjoying their life because they're my friends and they're people that I want good things for. So I'm not friends with anybody that I see that I'm angry that they're enjoying their life. Because then, why would I be friends with them? So that's number one. I don't really doom scroll. I don't scroll at all. I really limit my social media time. I only really look at things of interest, people that talk about positivity, health and wellness, influencers, that type of thing is really all I scroll. I don't read newspapers and I don't watch the news. And I like to read educational books. I really like to do things that I can control because when you're scrolling through things and you're looking at comments, you can't control what you see there. And, a lot of times those comments are not very nice. So I'm like, why would I subject myself to this? So I just don't.
Yeah, that's good. I love it. What's something you wish you knew starting out, that you know now? You ever think about something like that? Like, what's one thing you could say, God, I wish I would have known that 20 years ago, that you kind of like are pretty solid with now, that you know to be true?
I think it's probably the overthinking. No, it's taking better care of myself.
Okay. What do
Definitely
you
take
mean?
when you're young though, I feel like you feel like you're invincible. And not that I didn't, I've always exercised. I've always felt like the gym was important. But I was moving really fast through life for a really long time. And so like for example, this morning in church, there was this little like girl, she was probably 2 years old or something. Her mom came over and she scooped her up. And I thought to myself, this is probably gonna bring tears to my eyes, but I was like, I wonder when the last time was that I lifted my kids up like that. And I started thinking about that, and then I had to stop thinking about that because it made me sad. Because life goes by so quickly. And when you're a young parent and you have three little boys running around like crazy, you're just like, when is this going to end? When am I going to get sleep? When are they going to be independent? And then before you know it, you're getting sleep and they're independent and they don't want anything to do with you and you're no longer scooping them up. So now I've definitely slowed down. My mindfulness has really taught me to stop. And I do this thing when something is impactful. Like if one of my boys says something or does something that I want to remember, I click. I do like a click so that I can stop and be like, okay, I want you to remember this. because life is, we only remember the things that are out of the ordinary. You know, like
Sure.
your vacations, or you know, when you fell in love, or your first day on the job. So if you create a life of like childlike wonder, where new things are happening to you every day in your daily life, you give that click, and it's, and then things slow you. It's the only way that I know how to slow down time,
Yeah.
if that makes sense.
I agree with that. Yeah. Too often we lose that wonderment.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's.
We just think we know what the other person's going to say. We think we know what your partner is feeling. We think, but if you actually slow down and listen to what people are saying and don't think, I know what's going to come out of their mouth yet, there's more of a connection there. And so I think I would tell myself to slow down and snap more, you know, be more aware of those moments.
So where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
I see myself fluent in Spanish.
Okay.
I love education. You know, I went back to school for my master's degree, and then I'm in school now for a health and well-being certificate. And then after I get that, I'm planning on going to school and taking some Spanish classes. So I love continuous learning. I think it's really important for us as we age to be continuously challenging ourselves and learning. So I mean, I would say I'm going to be healthier than I am today. I'm going to be better. My mental well-being will be better. You know, I'll be fluent in Spanish, and I'll be extra happy with my life because I'm going to continue to do all the things I'm doing now, and I feel like the flow that I have going on right now is working.
I feel like just talking to you, I feel like I get this overriding sense that you're living with intention. You're not letting what's that saying that, where they say like don't let the day run you, you run the day. I feel like you're running your life. Like you're very intentional and you know what works. Like you know that to put out the outfit, it's going to remind you to go to the gym. Like you're most people don't do that, Melissa. They just kind of like let life dictate what happens next. And I think that's why we get so jammed up in our own thoughts and our own, you know, because there's so much out there happening. And if you don't take steps to limit that coming in and, you know, keeping yourself positive and keeping that guy sweeping the brain clean, I'm taking that with me. That was that's brilliant. I love that. And I just think what happens is if you get into that mindset where you're just like, oh, woe is me. And then the universe is just like, okay, more of that for you because that's how you view the world. That's what your lens, the lens you're looking through the world in is if it's negative, you're going to experience negative things. Just change the lens. Try to find the go back to that gratitude. What can you be grateful for? And it's not something that happens overnight. It's not
No,
like, well, I was
no.
grateful for yesterday. I did the work and, you know, nothing happened. My life is still, you know, I didn't lose any weight. I'm trying to, you know, whatever you're trying to accomplish, right? It takes time. And then by the time it does happen, you realize, oh, I'm doing it. You're
Right.
doing it. It's like
Right.
you didn't even like, so yeah. Okay. I think that's really smart. I love that. So, we're close to wrapping up here. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention? And we talked about mindfulness. We talked about our work experiences. I will say this: you were sitting next to me at the restaurant in King of Prussia when I had that pumpkin pie that I talk about in the book.
No way.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah, you were with me. That was with
Why
Ed
do I even
Harris.
remember that?
Yeah.
Huh.
I had that. Ed Harris was like, you should try the pumpkin pie. It's best ever. And I'm like, really? The best ever? I was like, okay, let's try this pumpkin pie. And it blew my mind. Like, it was like, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And it took me a year to like write that chapter about mastery. You know, but you were there. You were there for that. That was when we went down to meet Ed Harris to talk about doing some billboards for Valley Forge. And it was at J. Alexander's in the King of Prussia Mall.
Is that place still there?
Yeah.
Is it?
That pumpkin pie is ridiculous.
That chapter in your book was like, because I like to associate a lot of things in my life with food. I
Okay.
think that there's a lot of analogies in life that happen with food. And so I really resonated with that chapter. Can I ask you how long it took you to write your book? Like,
6 years.
six
Six.
years. And what was the motivation behind it?
Just kind of like you said, clocking all these experiences that I was having at these companies and how creativity was kind of like always there and present. And, I saw the power of it. I mean, Adams really, opened my eyes to the power of creativity. When I was at the morning call the first time, I mean, we were doing a job, we were trying to do the best we can, and we were serving the public, and these were black and white print ads. But when I got to Adams and I saw creativity put on a pedestal, that opened my eyes. And it just, I didn't know in that moment that, oh, I'm going to write a book one day about creativity. But I just started like just seeing how far this down the rabbit hole would go when you explore it as a topic. And I realize now creativity is, it's a source energy. It's a powerful source energy because it's connected to childhood. It's connected to a time when we were little geniuses. And I love that. That's why I look at it now. My job is like guiding people back to that version of themselves, right? That wonderment. Bring that into your adult life. Bring that wonderment. Bring that gratitude. You don't have to like work in a creative field in order to add creativity in your life. It's a lens. It's a lens to look through, to look at the world and not be cynical. I just started collecting all these stories and thinking about them and remembering them. And then one day it was like, it's time to get this done and start it. It took about 6 years to write it.
Well, it works. I mean, you've always been a really good storyteller, and all those stories that you had up here are now out here for everybody to enjoy. So it definitely worked.
And I always remember, I'm like an elephant. Like if you said something to me once, I remember everything. So that served in terms to write the book because it was
Absolutely.
like, I remember the restaurant, I remember the day, I remember where, I mean, it's not like I have an eidetic memory, but I have a really good memory.
Yeah, that's a great trait.
So let's end on this. What's the best piece of advice you ever received?
So I read in a book that joy was a decision that you get to make every day. And so it's your choice. You get to choose what the way that you want to see the world. And so I'm always going to choose joy. How about you?
I love that. I think same thing. That and another one that I liked was never arrive. Never arrive.
That's really good. That's powerful.
Two words.
Two
I
words.
simplified it to two words. No, actually, that was how it was told to me. And it has nothing to do with arriving in a limousine or a car. It's lifelong learning.
That's
It's
amazing.
never thinking you've got it all. Because the second you think you know it all, you're done.
Yes.
So never
I
arrive.
have to add that to my wall. Right next to me, I have my wall of all po it's all these little post-it notes of all the best sayings out there. I'm putting that right in the middle.
That's a
That's
good one,
great.
right? Never
Yeah,
arrive.
really good.
Melissa, thank you for doing this. This was a blast. We went like way over an hour. This was a great conversation.
I knew it would be, Bill. I knew it. We could talk for another hour and it would go by just like that.
I'm enjoying watching you from afar through LinkedIn and everything that you're doing. Just keep doing your thing. You're awesome. You're
Thank
amazing.
you.
Your husband's amazing. Your kids are cool. I just like this living with intention. You should do something with that if you're not already. You should kind of, because I think a lot of people could benefit from that message. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of people that want to live like that, but they don't know the first place to start. They just need a little guidance. You tell somebody, make your bed, start there. They're like, what? Make my bed? What does that have anything to do
That's
with
the best
anything?
advice ever.
Make your bed. You'd be surprised how when you go in at night and the bed's made, you're like, oh, I did that. Oh, that's right. I did that this morning. It's so stupid, but it works.
You could have the worst day ever, but you accomplish something if you make your bed.
That's right. Well, we've accomplished something here. So thank you
Thank
very
you
much
for
for being
asking
a
me
part of
on.
this. Thrilled to have you on AdYak. Keep doing
Thanks,
your thing,
Bill.
all right?
Appreciate it.
All right, be well.
Thanks, you too.
All right, Ad Yakkers, hope you enjoyed it, because we have many more great conversations planned and guests lined up ready to yak it up. Ad Yak is sponsored and produced by ASR Media. Theme song was written and performed by Dan Ross. Ad Yak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Stay hungry, stay humble. Till next time.
This episode of Ad Yak is rated O for, oh man, that was good.